Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of elite mountain biking. Welcome to episode 11. First up, a massive thank you to everyone who's tuned in so far. We've also had loads of people sending in pictures showing us where they're listening to the podcast. It's really cool to see people getting stuck in and enjoying what we're doing. If you're enjoying it, then let us know. Give us an iTunes review, give us a share on social media, make sure you're following us and tell your friends. We're Downtime Podcast on Instagram, The Downtime Podcast on Facebook, and Downtime Tweets on Twitter. Also, don't forget, we've got a Greg Minnaar signed jersey up for grabs at the moment. All you need to do is follow us on Instagram or Facebook, and we're going to choose a winner at random on the 30th of June. So you've got to be in it to win it. Okay, now on to this week's guest. We've got head Canyon Factory racing mechanic, Nigel Reeve. Nigel looks after Mark Wallace's bike and generally looks after the canyon pits at a race weekend. We sat down with him after Lords and had a good chat. We talk about all sorts of things like how he got to the position within the team that he currently holds, what kind of things make a good mechanic, what makes a good team, how hard it is to change teams as a mechanic, and also what we can all learn from Stevie Smith. Okay, without further ado, here's episode 11 with Nigel Reeve. Nigel Reeve, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Chris. It's a good opportunity to be on here.
Excellent. To start off then, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do? Just give us an overview.
My official job is the head mechanic of the Canyon Racing downhill team. In that, I look after Mark Wallace's bike and also kind of try and help out the other mechanics on the team if they need help and try and, as you put it, herd cats and keep all the cats going in the right direction.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about how you got to that position, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that maybe tinker with their own bike and or help their friends out and would really like to end up being a World Cup mechanic. How did you get to that point?
I was up snowboarding one day on Montcherie in Leger. Beautiful bluebird powder day, and out of the blue, Kathy Sessler from Santa Cruz Syndicate rang me up and asked me if I'd like to be Nathan Rennie's mechanic. Obviously, I said yes, and kind of sat down for a while to get my head around things, and that was 10 years ago, I think, this year, and yeah, since then, I've been through a few teams. The longest stint was with Da Vinci Global Racing and Stevie Smith. And obviously with the demise of DGR and the rise of Canyon, I've swapped over to Canyon this year.
Awesome. How did you get on Kathy Sessler's radar then? How did that phone call come about?
I honestly don't know. I think I'd been living and working in Morzine for a few years and helped out Nigel Page, who runs the Chain Reaction Cycles team,
yeah,
on a few things. And I believe it was him that put my name forward, but I could be wrong. Just going on rumors here.
Interesting. Good stuff. So what is it that you think makes you good at your job? Because, you know, like you say, you've been doing it for 10 years now, so you're obviously pretty good at it. What kind of characteristics or qualities do you think are important for a good mechanic?
I think to fit the description that you've just given, hiding your mistakes is probably probably the key to surviving 10 years. I guess attention to detail, ability to analyze your own performance constantly and constantly strive to be better. And at the end of the day, I think you just have to want to be there. You have to want to make a really good job of it and to do everything you can to do that.
So a bit of a passion for what you're doing, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
You talked about analysing your own performance. Can you give us a bit of an example around that and kind of how, you know, what that looks like for you?
Obviously, a race event's quite sort of fast-paced and stressful and so on. And you tend to develop a bunch of habits or systems to prevent you from making mistakes. Sometimes they don't prevent you making a mistake and you sort of have to hold up and look at it all and sort of analyze it and work out where things went wrong and how not to make the same mistake in the future. And I think you sort of have to be willing to be wrong about some of your opinions and so on in order to keep learning and keep progressing. So always having an eye on what other people are doing and always trying to think of every time you do something, be kind of in the back of your mind thinking, is there a better way we could do this?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you feed off the other mechanics in the team as well then? Are you kind of learning and improving as a unit?
Definitely. Like I think you learn something from everyone you work with, and some of the coolest things I've learned have come from people with far less experience than me. So they're obviously faster learners. And yeah, ideally on a team, the mechanics or the staff in general can kind of feed off each other and gain a bit of momentum. And I guess that's the whole point of the "there's no I in team" mm-hmm. saying.
Yeah, cool. And do you find you learn from the riders as well? Do they get kind of involved in the mechanic side of things and help you guys move forwards?
You definitely do when you start working with a rider who's new to you as a mechanic, particularly one who's experienced. Mm-hmm. They kind of bring along with them all the cool tricks that their previous mechanics have used, and most riders are quite involved with the mechanical side. I mean, some of them might not be able to do everything themselves, but they do all pay quite a lot of attention to all the details. And I guess they like to see a mechanic doing the same thing as well.
Yeah, cool. Are there any, you mentioned cool tricks, are there any cool tricks that you can tell us about? Anything interesting in the way that you approach setting up a bike or working on the bikes?
There's plenty of cool tricks. They generally sort of all pertain to a certain certain product or a certain problem or something like that. I guess now with nearly everyone having converted to tubeless, probably the simplest trick, which I learned from Christian at MS Racing, is take the valve core out before you try and inflate the thing. And your success rate goes up to 90% or something like that. Just simple little things like that, which you may have only done before in sort of desperate times. Mm-hmm. And you learn just to do the key things every single time. And that's where how you can sort of operate a bit more efficiently.
Yeah, interesting. Anything that helps putting tubeless tires on a rim would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's something which someone showed me, and yeah, it was a game changer. It's like, oh, this is actually really, really simple. I now consider putting an inner tube in a bit of a hassle.
Fair enough. So you carry a valve core remover at all times?
Yeah. It's not like it's an expensive tool or anything. So
no, super simple. So you've moved to a new team over the winter, so no more DaVinci, and you've moved on to the Canyon team. So obviously for riders changing bikes or changing significant parts of the bikes over winter, there's a lot for them to do. I'm guessing there's probably a lot for you guys to do as well. Can you talk us through what it takes for you to shift from one team to another?
A hell of a lot. Like, firstly, you've got to deal with a whole new group of people working in a generally a fairly stressful situation. So just on the whole social side of it, learning where everyone fits in, how far you can push people before they punch you in the head and stuff like that. That's definitely a learning curve. Then we've obviously been through the whole kind of off-season development cycle of taking a good but production bike and turning it into a World Cup race-ready bike, which took the best part of 5 weeks of test camps and testing and so on. And funnily enough, before Lords, 2 days before Lords was the first time I actually put one of those bikes together, because I'd been so caught up in all the testing and doing other things. So come race day at Lords, I was still a little bit confused when it came to bolt checking a bike and so on. I still had a lot to learn.
Awesome. So do you find that you can create that kind of stressful environment with the team outside of a race event, or does it really come down to the first race together before it totally shakes out?
You can't replicate racing, and that extends all the way to the way that the riders ride the bikes. Like, you can have a bike that's been absolutely fault-free for weeks or months of testing and off-season use, and then the second you sling a top rider down a downhill, a World Cup course on it, there's this whole multitude of problems that comes from them riding far harder, faster, and so on than they normally would. I guess that's why the top riders are the top riders, is they rise to the occasion on World Cup courses. Mm-hmm. And then on the staff side, I think it's a similar sort of thing. All the experienced staff who have worked for, you know, many seasons at World Cups, they just operate normally under the kind of exceptional circumstances of a race week. And yet, like the riders, they rise to the occasion and suddenly don't need to sleep so much or eat so much and things like that.
Okay. And how important is it for a rider to have a good team around them? Will the top riders thrive wherever you put them, or does it need a good support crew and a good effective team?
The top riders, I think, will always be the top riders. They're generally there because of what's within them. However, I think an exceptional team has the ability to identify talent and develop riders and just create champions. Mm-hmm. And that's through having exceptional people in every role within the team. And those teams operating like that are pretty thin on the ground, in all honesty. Something that I've noticed in the past, like, for example, in Stevie's 2013 season, is the concept of momentum on a team. So when a team is doing well, it becomes easier for everyone and more positive, and you can kind of generate some momentum, and, you know, a winning rider can help bring up the other riders on the team just through the ambience and so on the team. And having seen riders who are sort of stuck on teams they're not happy with or product that they're not happy with, I think there is a big influence in it. It's more in terms of results over a year than a given result on a weekend. Any rider can rise to the occasion on a single weekend in the year, but to do it, you know, race after race, that's where the team element comes in, I think.
Okay, interesting. And you obviously had a good start with Canyon to the season, so second place for Mark at Lords. You can debate, you know, the weather impact on that particular event. Does that result give the team momentum? Do you think that starts building that rolling momentum that will take you through the rest of the season? Or is that not really going to have a huge impact?
I would say that in inverted commas, controversial situation at Lords, where, the top 17 riders weren't, you know, given the opportunity to put down some real times, I think that undermined slightly our feeling after the race, and also with Troy being so far back in the results, and Troy supposedly being our number one guy. In reflection, a few days later, though, and looking at the points gaps in the overall and so on for all the key players, I think we came out of it fairly happy. But I mean, it was the first World Cup for a whole new team. We sort of mumbled our way through it, in all honesty, and sort of came together afterwards and went, right, we need to do a better job at the next race. But I mean, it was all positive for sure.
Interesting. So work to do, but a good start.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of work to do, but I mean, that's also racing. You never really focus on the positives. You tend to focus on how you can improve things.
OK. Cool. Do you, I mean, you obviously spend a lot of time in the pits area at a race. Do you get any input into a team like Canyon when they're designing their pit setup?
Yes and no, I guess. The pit setup is obviously key to the mechanics, because in downhill racing, we pretty much spend an entire week there apart from going to the hotel to sleep. In terms of the appearance of it and so on, that's all something that's, you know, run by a marketing department and stuff like that. But in terms of logistics and so on, the mechanics have pretty good control of the situation.
So you look at the layout of the area, the size of the area, and the way that your work flows through that zone, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of consider riders have to be able to ride in and out of the tent to their designated mechanics without interfering with each other or anyone else. And then mechanics tend to have to go from their workbench to the team truck quite frequently. So they're kind of the two flows you have to consider. And then there's lighting, potential flooding risk, which comes with the territory, and things like that that all have to sort of play into it as well.
Interesting stuff. But,
I mean, once you on any given team with, you know, a given tent, after a couple of races, you tend to work out what the best setup is, and then you just roll with that 90% of the time.
Interesting. And do you get the same kind of floor space at each of the events, or does that change in size and shape?
There's a whole lot of things in the UCI rules where you have the UCI elite teams or the UCI teams, and each one of those gets allotted a certain area to pit, and then you're allowed to pay for extra.
Okay.
Once a team's committed to like a vehicle and an awning or tents or whatever, you're then pretty much set for however many years you're going to run that setup.
Okay, cool. Talk a little bit about the bike setup side of things then. What, in your experience, what are the key variables on a bike that the riders will focus on the most? And does that vary by rider, race venue, conditions, that kind of thing?
The two key things that a rider will change every single track or every single day or every single race weekend is suspension and tires. Mm-hmm. Everything else is generally judged on, does it work perfectly? Like, do your gears work perfectly? Yes or no. Do your brakes work perfectly? Yes or no. But suspension or tires, they're the things that can get changed, you know, 3-4 times a day at a race. And in fact, in a race weekend, as a rider begins to gain speed and confidence on the track, you have this constant evolution in settings, which takes you to in terms of suspension, a firmer and firmer setup as you approach race time. And you get to the point where the bike that they race on is virtually unrideable at anything, you know, less than sort of 90% of race pace. And then you go to the next race venue and back everything off and start that process again.
So it's less of a kind of tuning the suspension into the course and more about tuning them into the pace as they increase the pace throughout the weekend, or?
It's a bit of both. The setting that you begin with, I think, on the suspension is relative to the course that you're at and the conditions that it provides.
Mm-hmm.
But then from that base setting and obviously the weather conditions, you then have a constant progression in terms of with the rider's speed. And it's always just a progression to a stiffer and stiffer setup as they want the bike to go faster and faster.
Cool. And with the tire side of things, is it just tire changes, i.e. different patterns or different compounds, or are they changing pressures significantly as well?
There's a little bit of fiddling with pressures. It's usually 1 or 2 PSI, and it's usually either going up in pressure because you're destroying too many wheels, or down in pressure because it's way too slippery. And then it's obviously, first of all, finding the right tyre for the conditions, and then some mechanics will also cut or modify the tyres to make them more suitable to a very specific condition.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. So let's, I mean, you didn't have this situation, I don't think, at Lourdes, but I'm sure you've had it in other events. It's been dry all weekend. You're looking at heading up for your race run with your rider and the rain's forecast. What does that mean for a mechanic? Because that can't be fun.
Oh, it means you get to have something to focus all your stress on rather than stressing about, you know, did I do each one of those 20 volts up properly? I mean, you're always stressed before race run anyway, so it literally is just a focal thing. You just have to work with what you know. Like, if you know, for example, Fort William, you run dry tires there in the rain, so no one's bothered by that situation at Fort William. But if you know, say, in somewhere like Lourdes, where it gets almost unrideable as soon as it gets wet, then it's definitely cause for concern. But I think with experience and so on, you get to a point where you know sort of the time cutoffs for making changes going into race run. So if you've only got 5 minutes to go at the top and you don't think you can swap a set of wheels in 5 minutes, you learn not to try. And I mean, that's where a lot of the experience as a race mechanic, I think, is important, where you learn to your experience allows you to judge situations in sort of a more objective fashion, and that in turn helps your rider because you appear to be more in control of the situation.
Interesting. So that's one of the ways you deal with the stress, I guess. Are there any other techniques that you use to kind of keep that stress at bay or deal with and manage that stress throughout a hectic race weekend?
The stress itself is just a motivator. But I think it's certain type of people who are motivated by having that pressure on them. And, I mean, there's a lot of things that you do in terms of making sure that you stay focused through the weekend. You'll notice a lot of mechanics wear headphones a lot of the time. And regardless of what they're listening to, the key thing is it cuts out all the noise, so they can just sort of focus on firstly the task at hand, but also prioritizing everything else that's necessary. And as I said, you sort of just find a way that works for you that allows you to operate in a fairly logical fashion, yeah, despite the chaos around you.
And do you think it's important that the mechanic, as much as possible, appears calm to help the riders stay in a good headspace before a race run?
Oh, definitely. Sometimes, like, when the pressure's really on, it's hard to hide the fact that your hands are shaking when you're trying to stick an Allen key into a bolt or something like that. But then you also have to, learn to laugh at the situation as well. It's definitely important if you, if you're an absolute stress case as a mechanic, that's going to flow over onto a rider. And probably the easiest way to see the difference in that in mechanics is if you go to the top of a World Cup for race run. It's absolute serenity up there. There's 25 people, no noise. Everyone just knows what they're doing. Everything's under control. Whereas if you go up there for the riders who are like 40th to 80th, it's absolute mayhem. There's people running everywhere. There's people shouting. It's insane. It's horrible.
That's really interesting. So there's a massive difference in the organization and the practice between the two different groups.
Yeah, because when you have the top 10 there, you have it's just experienced professionals and no one else. And it is really, really serene. And in fact, it's something the riders notice the first time they qualify in sort of the top three or something like that. Because when you're the last rider to go there at the top of the hill and there's just the two start guys and a mechanic and nothing else, and it's a really weird feeling, I think, for the riders the first time. And then it becomes normal. And it's going to be interesting actually at Fort William with riders like Troy and Greg and so on, who are Aaron, who are so far down in the rankings for qualifying. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting how that affects them, because it's not something any of them have dealt with for quite a long time.
Interesting. So yeah, they're going to be up there in the chaos getting ready for their qualifying run.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's going to be mums and dads running around and all that sort of stuff that they're not used to.
Interesting. Oh, I never realized that. That's really cool. Thanks. So we try and, as much as possible, we try and give hints and tips for people, things that they can maybe try at home. I think you've mentioned one already, which is going to help everyone seat their tubeless tires. But are there any other kind of little setup tips or mechanic tips that you would recommend for people to try, or is it all top secret?
There's not really that many secrets. Excuse me one sec. Yeah, there's not that many secrets, to be honest. For people at home, probably the key thing is keep it clean. Dirt does far more damage to your bike than jet washing it. Jet washing isn't the best thing you can do to your bike, but if it's the means to an end, it does the job. Probably the other thing I've noticed, with friends I ride with and so on, I think you can do the same amount of work to your bike and preemptively maintain it versus do the same amount of work and just keep the thing holding together and running. The difference is, if you preemptively maintain your bike, it's way nicer to ride. And riding your bike's supposed to be the most important part of the whole equation. So I guess, yeah, keep it clean and just do maintenance as a habit, and then you won't have those times where you go out riding and the day just turns into a nightmare and you end up stuck in the garage.
What are the sort of, if you're going to try and keep a regular maintenance schedule for your bike, what are the kind of key tasks that you ought to think about doing on a fairly regular basis then?
Wash it, spray something like GT85 or WD-40 on all your pivots. Don't spray it anywhere near your brakes, obviously. Change brake pads before they're completely worn out. The less wear that the brake has to compensate for, the better the brake will work. Mm-hmm. A gear cable is a very cheap way to make gears work very well. In terms of like trail bikes and so on, with these new really large ratio cassettes, new chains are probably the cheapest way to save a very expensive cassette.
So get a chain checker tool to make sure that the it's within its wear limits, I guess, is a pretty handy thing to have for £8 or £9.
Yeah, exactly. And then just don't be afraid to bend the chain when it's time. And it's quite literally you're going to spend the same amount of time and the same amount of money. So if you just do things before they need to be done, it just means that every time you go riding, hopefully it's a good day.
Yeah, cool. Okay, you've worked for a few riders throughout your career so far. What have you learned, if anything, that has influenced either your own bike setup or your own riding from these guys?
I learned that I can't ride a bike. there's nothing more humbling than following a World Cup rider into your local track, and with them having never ridden it before and them just completely destroying you when they don't know where they're going. It's funny, if you work with a rider for long enough, things like their lever position and handlebar setup and seat and so on, it becomes intuitive for you as a mechanic, and your own setup begins to replicate theirs. To a point where, the past 6 years I've worked for riders who run the brakes the opposite way around to me. Mm-hmm. And I find when I get back from a World Cup, I have a couple of hairy moments where I grab a handful of front brake expecting to do a cool skid or something. That's probably it. I think it's important as a mechanic to be able to separate yourself as a rider from the actual role as being a mechanic. I think it's dangerous ground to think that your riding experience is really relevant to, to someone like Stevie Smith or Troy Brosnan or Mark Wallace or whatever, because it just isn't.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Stevie, who obviously we sadly lost just over a year ago now. I never met the guy, but he always came across as having a super positive energy out on the circuit. If if people could learn one thing from the way that Stevie lived his life, or more than one, what would it be? What should we take from Stevie and make live on as a legacy?
Positivity is probably one of the key things. He was, I mean, we were never with Da Vinci Global Racing, we were never one of the biggest or most well-funded teams. So he had to deal with quite a lot of things that some of his competitors didn't. And just being happy with what you've got. And a key thing which I see in other top riders who are sort of true champions like Stevie is take responsibility for your own situation, and make the best that you can with it and be happy with that.
Cool. So yeah, keeping positive and yeah, taking all the good things and moving on.
Yeah, exactly. There was floating around on Instagram, I think last year, just after Stevie died, there was a good photo from Lloydie at Lord's where it's the night before the race and Stevie's sitting in the living room cutting his own tires, and then he obviously got second the next day, and that's the kind of attitude that's that made him really special, I think.
Yeah, sounds like a hard worker then.
Yeah, not definitely not afraid of hard work
Yeah.
at all.
Work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Okay, we're coming relatively close to the end of our time together today. There's a couple of extra questions, I guess, that I'd like to cover. First one is from your toolbox, can you pick kind of three things that you couldn't live without? We asked John Hall a similar question, so I'm interested to hear your take on that one.
Can I just answer the toolbox?
Yeah, go on then.
Three things I can't live without. Probably T-handled Allen keys.
Yeah.
I first saw those in Matty DePell, who runs the Kona team. First saw them in his toolbox in 09 and had to get a set. And now they're kind of seems to be like the definition of a World Cup mechanic now is that. Every single mechanic seems to have a set.
What makes the
So,
T, what makes the T handle so good?
it's oh, I can't the words escaping my mind. Versatility.
Okay.
Obviously, you've got a long handle and a short handle all in one. They generally you can get them to fit in most spots on a bike. They're a lot better balanced than the typical plastic handled, I think they're called P-handled Allen keys that you see in bike shops and so on.
Yeah.
So they're a lot easier to spin bolts out quickly and sort of work efficiently with.
Okay,
And I
cool.
think they just look a bit more pro and everyone wants to look pro.
Nice.
So that's one. Digital vernier calipers, I think I'd put on the list.
What kind of stuff are you measuring with that then? What are the important measurements you take with a vernier over the weekend?
One key thing I keep an eye on is spring preload on the rear shock, on the
Okay.
coil shock. But just generally speaking, the numbers never lie. So if everything's done by numbers, you tend to have some form of consistency.
Yeah.
Like distance that the levers are from the bars, or the lever clamp from the grip or whatever.
Okay.
Things like that are sort of constantly being measured.
Yeah.
I don't know what else really. There's nothing that special. Probably a hammer.
Good hammer.
Yeah, 'cause can't beat a good hammer.
Excellent. You put quite a lot of effort into your toolbox build, I think. Can you just give us a little bit of an overview of how you approach that and what you've put together? Because it looks pretty special.
Yeah, it was inspired by the Yeti Polar Bear, Sean Hughes's tool case. So just a stock Pelican, I think it's a 1550 case, which is the lightest case we could sort of find. And then approaching it from a perspective of being able to have the tools I use all the time, very readily available and easy to keep in some semblance of order, and also being able to carry every single critical thing I need for a World Cup, even if it's, you know, cans or Montsonan or whatever. Mm-hmm. I know that if I have that tool case, I might need to go to the hardware store for a couple of things, but I generally have every single thing I need inside it, and it's just on 25 kilos, so it's okay to fly with.
Awesome. Impressive stuff. And the other question is, if people had £100, so kind of around what you could spend on a fancy set of pedals, to try and improve their riding life, so whether that's a bike component or a gadget or a tool, what would you recommend people spend £100 on?
Jeez, that's a very good question. I'd suggest that the first thing they should do is go and buy a coffee or a beer and sit down and think about things.
Okay, sounds good.
And then the remaining 90 quid. Change your riding life. Well, you can't buy riding friends.
No.
They're not real friends. I would say probably put the 90 quid in the pocket of their riding shorts so they can buy beers or coffees at the end of the next ride.
Excellent. I like it. That sounds like a great ride. 90 quid's worth of post-ride beer sounds like a lot of fun.
Maybe a little bit for the taxi ride home after that.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, thanks for your time today. We really appreciate you coming on. If people want to follow you at all throughout the season, are there social media channels where they can keep an eye on you, or the Canyon Racing Team social media?
Yes, but I don't know what they are.
Okay. Well, we can find that out. We can put that in the show notes so people can find it on the website. So people can get to that. Cool.
I'll get that too.
All right. Good stuff. Well, thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it. It's been super interesting chatting.
Thank you, Chris. It's been awesome.
Awesome. Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, that's it for episode 11. Really hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more about Nigel and the Canyon Factory team, then you can follow them on Instagram, where they're Canyon_Factory Racing, or on Facebook, where they're Canyon Factory Racing. Okay. Well, if you've enjoyed the episode, then please let us know, get in touch on social media, share it with your friends, the more the merrier. We'll be back on the 27th of June with another episode, but until then, get out and ride.